I'm Dime Roberts, stage and studio. We're listening to music from composer and pianist John Jang from his CD Two Flowers on a Stem. You can hear more of his music at johnjang.com. For more than three decades, playwright Philip Kangatanda has changed American theater by committing to write plays with Asian American characters and highlighting moments of history that might not otherwise have been featured. With more than 20 plays and several short films, Philip Kangatanda has provided opportunities for Asian American talent through his own creative writing. Gatanda is a recipient of the Guggenheim as well as other honors and awards, and currently he teaches at the University of California in Berkeley. Gatanda will be in Portland June 3rd for a free masterclass at Portland Center Stage, sponsored by the Dramatists Guild Fund. You can find out more info at pcs.org/blog. I last talked with Philip Kangatanda 3 years ago when he was doing a talk at Reed College. At that time, he was working on his play Chang and Eng. During the last couple of years, though, he's moved on to other playwriting projects, including revising his play After the War, which was first produced at American Conservatory Theater and UC Berkeley. Now the play's title is After the War Blues. I talked to Gatanda via FaceTime about his inspiration for the play. He told me about the time after World War II when neighborhoods in San Francisco became even more multicultural than ever before.
To me, that was such an interesting moment in time where, you know, you have these two very marginalized communities at that point in time trying to figure out whose home this was, you know. And so I thought, that would be an interesting time to examine, especially to look at in terms of sort of the intersectionality of races and cultures and communities, to be able to look at that and see if it, in telling that story, you know, information is revealed. So that was why initially I was drawn to that particular moment. You know, it only happened, there's only one other place that happened like that, and that was in Los Angeles, had a little bit of that happening, and a little in Chicago, post-World War II, where Japanese Americans returned back to their communities. So that transition period, that overlapping, that intersection of communities, race, and ethnicities, to me, I thought was really a strong possibility for a story. One period in time, like one, about the only time in American history that these two communities overlapped in this particular kind of situation. And this was when both Japanese Americans and African Americans were both disenfranchised, and they found themselves in a situation where they were forced to kind of figure out whose home this neighborhood was going to be. So prior to the war, this is prior to World War II, Japanese Americans lived in Japantown in San Francisco. This is in the early 40s. African Americans and other marginalized peoples lived around the area in Western Addition, the Fillmore District. And so then you had World War II, and then you had the concentration camps for Japanese Americans. They were interned, and then in their absence, there was this vacuum. There were no people. People had moved out. So in their absence, African Americans and other marginalized peoples kind of moved into the community and moved into what was then before Japantown. So that's what happened. And then the Japanese Americans got out of the internment camps and wanted to come back home. And when they came back to San Francisco, of course, their community, Japantown, was now peopled and populated by other peoples. And so there was this moment of overlap where Japanese Americans wanted to come back home, and also African Americans and other marginalized peoples had taken over Japantown and made it their own with this vibrant jazz and blues scene. So to me, that was such an interesting moment in time where, you know, you have these two very marginalized communities at that point in time trying to figure out whose home this was. You know, and so I thought that would be an interesting time to examine, especially to look at in terms of sort of the intersectionality of races and cultures and communities, to be able to look at that and see if it, in telling that story, you know, information is revealed. So that was why initially I was drawn to that particular moment. You know, it only happened, there's only one other place that happened like that, and that was in Los Angeles, had a little bit of that happening, and a little in Chicago, post-World War II, where Japanese Americans returned back to their communities. So that transition period, that overlapping, that intersection of communities, race, and ethnicities, to me, I thought was really a strong possibility for a story.
In many of his plays, Gotanda has focused on the history of Japanese-American internment during World War II. He says many Japanese-Americans have changed the way they talk about and define this tragic history.
There have been sort of several movements over the years as to what is the best way to express that Japanese-American experience of being imprisoned, incarcerated, interned, relocated. And I know the term concentration camp is one that is is fraught, because some people feel it in some way compares the experience to the Holocaust, which they aren't comparable. And then internment camp seemed totally descriptive. I think what I normally say is Japanese Americans were incarcerated, but it's hard to figure out a way to say that as far as a noun. So, you know, to me, I've been using imprisoned, and it's my personal term. I didn't use it just, you know, when we were speaking earlier, but when I think about it, my own parents, I think imprisoned is a good term for myself personally. They were incarcerated in Roar, Arkansas, and they were there for about 3 years. And they were, you know, from the Stockton community in California. And all of the community in Stockton were interned, were incarcerated. I think one of the things to remember is that this was an entire community, you know, in mass. And if you were part of the Japanese American community, it meant everyone you knew, your family, your community, you know, the people that you sort of socialized with, everybody was sort of picked up and sort of moved out. So it was an event that happened to a whole community. It didn't just happen to an individual. And so as a consequence, it also impacted them as a group. I think it affected how they viewed America, how they viewed themselves, and also what they passed on to their children in terms of their perceptions about who they were, how they viewed being Japanese American, how they viewed being American.
You're listening to Stage and Studio. My guest is Philip Kangatanda. I talked with him via FaceTime about his plays, especially those that cover the history of Japanese American internment. You can read more about him and his plays at philipkangatanda.com. And I also have that link at stageandstudio.org. If you missed any of this interview, you can hear it again there, as well as kbu.fm/stageandstudio. The featured music is John Jang's CD, Two Flowers on a Stem. You can hear more of John Jang at johnjang.com. I asked Philip Kangatanda about the impact the internment experience has had on his writing.
As a whole community, you know, up to 120,000 of us were affected. And, you know, that gets passed on. And so for me, one of the things I particularly examine is the idea of sort of the internalized, sort of, I think, self-hate to some degree, internalized sense of being less than, an internalized sense of also feeling great anger towards America and distrust for the government. All those things, I think, were a part of how Japanese were impacted as an entire community. You know, it creates a whole kind of in mass, a psychological impact, and that gets passed on. And so for me, I wasn't in the I wasn't incarcerated. I was born subsequent to that, but most definitely, I feel that I was in some way, you know, I was impacted by all that was sort of passed on to me, and particularly psychologically, and that is what I've explored a lot in my writing.
Philip Kangatanda says the time after World War II fascinated him because it's a time when displaced peoples came together into one neighborhood in San Francisco. This coming together also caused conflict between cultural communities. He says this coming together also caused conflict between cultural communities.
You know, my own personal point of view is that it's only natural that there was disagreement and there would be discord. I mean, both peoples are disenfranchised. Both peoples are looking to sort of figure out what is America, where is my home. And for many of those African Americans who had moved over from the Western Addition and Fillmore, they had found a space and they made it their own. They brought with them this vibrant sort of blues and jazz scene. And so they were very much entrenched. And then you get Japanese Americans who have felt that they've been basically sort of, they wondered if they were Americans anymore. And they came back to the West Coast. They come back to the only community they've known. And rightfully so, they want it back. They want to feel like they belong again. And so it's only natural that if you have these two communities intersect, there would be a sense of, discord. I believe, again, it's to some degree speculating. It's talking to people and looking at photographs. But my sense is there was discord. And at the same time, there were individuals who really tried to reach across and sort of, live side by side. And so you had churches that were to some degree shared. You had friendships. And there's a wonderful photograph that I used as part of my inspiration that was taken from this book called Fillmore, The Fillmore. And it's photographs taken of the Fillmore during the kind of jazz scene that was happening. And there's one particular photograph that shows a wedding. And it's a wedding between, it looks like a man and a woman cutting a piece of cake. And the man is biracial. Again, I'm reading into it, but he appears to be half black and half Japanese. The woman is Japanese American. And the people at the wedding reception are all mixed. It's African American and Japanese American. And it's in the 40s, or like late 30s, or it's in the 40s. And so to me, that I use that as the basis of, the inspiring story that, of course, there was an intersection. Of course, there was actually, a sharing. At the same time, I'm well aware of the fact that there was discord on both sides of people being resentful on both sides as to, this is my home. Why are you here, or why are you coming back? So in that sense, I've tried to capture all of that in the story, that there were two, that there were individuals who were trying to make it work, who had an understanding, who had friendships, and that they were living in a community that was trying to live their life and also establish it. And that meant there was going to be kind of discord over, proprietary sort of ownership of the community.
I just wanted to ask you your process of writing a play. Where do you start? Writers are often asked this question, right?
My normal process is that I'm drawn to something, drawn to stories. And in this particular instance, I was drawn to several incidences in history that I was attracted to. One was the idea of this period in San Francisco history where African Americans and Japanese Americans overlapped in this one community. The other, I was interested in several other kinds of stories. One was I was interested in the jazz scene and blues scene that was evolving in that community at that time. It was going from swing, which was basically a kind of white form of jazz, into bebop, which was more black influenced. And so that was happening as the backdrop where, and groups either were black or white, they were segregated, and Japanese jazz musicians played with the black groups. And then it moved into sort of an integrated period where you had your first sort of interracial group in that time period. So I was very intrigued by the idea of music, American music, and how that in some way demonstrated what was going on in the country, that particular period in terms of the community, and then also some issues that had to do with being Japanese American, being a no-no boy, being a jazz musician, being an outsider within your own community. All those things were swirling around inside of my head. But what happens is usually it sort of just kind of bounces around inside of me. And what began to take shape was this friendship between two men, Earl and Chet. And as that began to take shape inside of me, it allowed me to begin to think, oh, here's the story. It is these two men, kind of, again, also sharing a space, sharing this kind of boarding house. And once that began to take kind of become real with these two characters, the story began to take shape and tumble out. And then, so usually what it is I kind of gather information and then it rolls around inside of me. And then it begins to tumble out as it sort of comes together into a kind of actual story. So that's how it happens.
Gotanda's play After the War has had two productions in San Francisco, which led him to revise his play into After the War Blues. I asked him about the response from the previous productions and how it helped him to rewrite his play.
The response has been very strong, and I think what people appreciate and what I've tried to do is to try to have the characters be portrayed. I try very hard to make the characters move and act in a way that really reflects the truthfulness of the situations, which is to say that I don't try to make everything nice, you know, because it wasn't nice, you know, on a day-to-day level, trying to come back and, you know, reintegrate yourselves into America, you know, was not pretty. And also the idea that, you know, various racial groups would suddenly sort of embrace each other and sort of, and become friends immediately and be able to live together. To me, that's unrealistic to assume that happened, and it didn't, you know. So to me, people appreciate the idea that there's a truthful sort of portrayal of much of the tension and the friction, and perhaps how folks work through that, as opposed to assuming all was nice and all was good. And I think people, in particular, sort of when they see the plays, are moved and informed about the sort of underbelly and tension and complicated tensions that existed both within the Japanese-American community and also the Japanese-American community and other communities that they were living with. And so to me, that's one of the sort of biggest responses is to one, appreciate that, and also to see stories that were not just about, again, Japanese-American communities, but also sort of the intersection with, you know, there's a Russian Jewish woman character, there's a white Southern woman, there are African Americans. It's a very strong, rich mix of America, cross-section of America. And I've tried to portray that in a very truthful manner. And people seem to be most appreciative of that, of looking at sort of this American story in which it isn't sugar-coated, you know. I really try to show what went on.
Philip Kankatanda will be in Portland June 3rd for a free masterclass at 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Portland Center Stage. It's part of the Dramatists Guild Fund Traveling Masters Program. More info can be found at pcs.org/blog, and more info also about the Dramatists Guild Fund at dgfund.org. Kankatanda says he'll use the example of After the War Blues to talk about the challenges of writing characters outside of your own cultural perspective.
Yeah, what I thought I would do is sort of focus it on, you know, the writing of After the War Blues. But in doing that, also talk about my process, you know, what and how I approach it in terms of what we talked about, sort of using history, using sort of what is happening psychologically to a community en masse because of the incarceration. So looking at both from the actual play, the making of it. And then the third thing I'd like to explore is, again, as a playwright, you know, how does one develop stories? How does one discover information? How does one portray accurately stories of other communities? In other words, I can write about being Japanese American, but what happens when that community sort of intersects with African Americans, you know, white Anglos, you know, also in the case of my story, a Russian Jewish immigrant who comes to San Francisco by way of Yokohama, Japan, you know. And so these people all kind of mix up in a community like you have in Japantown. And how does one do that? How does one do that authentically, you know? So in particular, African Americans, you know, pose a great challenge, and it requires that I do a lot of homework. And then also very much, you know, work with other peoples and African Americans in the process to make sure, you know, my portrayal of another community, of another racial category in America, is as authentic as possible. And so to me, there's like the approach of, I'm writing this play, it has a layer of history that I have to sort of investigate. And then also there's a process of me as a writer writing the story, being Philip, who is Japanese American, and then trying to be able to, in an authentic, you know, manner, capture the lives of other peoples and how to go about that, and making sure I do my homework and do as best as possible job as I can.
So I have one final question. What are you working on now?
Well, there are actually two that I'm working on even as we speak, and I have two deadlines on them, but one is an opera I've been working on called Both Eyes Open. And what it is it was inspired by a photograph that I came across several years ago, and it kind of haunted me. And what it was a photograph taken from, like, this around 1942. It was taken at outside the Jerome relocation camp, and it's of a young man who committed suicide by laying down on the railroad tracks. And it's the backstory is it was a young Japanese American man who was interned in, I think at the time he was either in Roar, and then he might have moved over to Jerome, or still in Roar, but he left and sneaked out of the camps at night and went over to a railroad track and committed suicide. And there is a photograph of him sort of laying on the tracks. And that was such a haunting photograph that just that image stuck with me. And I decided to write a libretto based on that. And so the new opera I'm working on is sort of based and sort of telescopes out as to what was the story of this young man and why did he do that? And so it's an opera, and it's also I'm using, instead of traditional opera, more new music. So there's invented instruments that are used and are part of the musical score. And so the intention is to both tell the story, both in a different way, looking at this particular story from the vantage point of more of a kind of a more sort of new music avant-garde way of kind of viewing the particular story, and hopefully it heightens it and tells it in more of a psychological, non-linear, imagistic way. So that's what I'm working on now, and I'm literally working with the composer. I worked with him all last night, and I'm working with him on it today, and hopefully we'll have it done. We're going to debut it in mid-2017.
Anywhere in particular?
Tentatively, we're going to debut it in the Bay Area in San Francisco, and then hopefully move it around. So we're hoping certainly we can get up to the Pacific Northwest, and do it up there also. But they're wonderful music. These are top-notch, composers, and our lead singer is someone who, he's a world-renowned tenor who lives in the Bay Area and whom I got to know, and we decided to try our project together. His name is John Dykers. And he's appeared in, several of things like Nixon in China and some other well-known operas. But it's an exciting project because I've never worked in this area before, and especially in kind of a more of a new music sort of this, it's not traditional music, so it's very exciting. It's a challenge for me, and also I wanted to perhaps, you take a story that has to do with the incarceration of Japanese Americans. And I think you have to have, for me, I have to have a new take on it because I've written about it in various ways for 30 years. So I want to make sure that for me, the take is a new one, that it's a new telling of the story and offers new information, or it's told in a way that allows you to look at the story differently. And so that is the intention with both eyes open.
And do you want to talk about your other project?
Yeah, I'm actually working up in Seattle, and I'm working with a theater there called a contemporary theater. And what it is I was asked to adapt the Japanese novel Tale of Heike. And the Tale of Heike is sort of the counterpart to the Tale of Genji. These are both sort of big ancient tome stories. Tale of Genji was about court life in around the 13th century in Japan. Tale of Heike is about the warring families who are trying to consolidate power in Japan in sort of the 12th, 13th centuries. And so it's a huge historical novel, and I was asked to adapt it. And so I'm collaborating with a Seattle playwright named Yusef El Gindi. He's Egyptian American. And so he and I are adapting it for the former artistic director, Kurt Beattie, for a contemporary theater, and we've been adapting it and working on it for almost 2 years now. And we're going to debut it up there at ACT Theater in mid-2017, too. Should be a fun, it's a huge palette, with a lot of rich historical characters and fight scenes, and it's just a fun, it's going to be a big, fun, a wild piece called Tale of Heike. And so that'll mid 2017.
And that was Philip Kangatanda. You can find out more about him at philipkangatanda.com or stageandstudio.org, where you can also find out about his free masterclass June 3rd, 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Portland Center Stage as part of the Dramatists Guild Fun Traveling Masters Program. More info on that at pcs.org/blog and dgfund.org. And if you want to see a staged reading of Gatanda's play After the War Blues, there will be two staged reading performances, 1:30 p.m. on Saturday, June 4th, and 1:30 p.m. on Sunday, June 5th, both at Portland State University's Lincoln Hall Studio Theater. That's located at 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. Playwright Philip Kangatanda will be attending the performances, and there will be an audience talkback after both shows. It's presented by Theater Diaspora, a group I'm involved in. Theater Diaspora is Portland and Oregon's first and only Asian American Pacific Islander theater company. For tickets and more info, visit theaterdiaspora.org or brownpapertickets.com. I also have all this info, plus the podcast of this show at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. Our featured music was John Jang's Two Flowers on a Stem, and you can find out more about John Jang and hear his music at johnjang.com. That's it for Stage and Studio. You can like us on facebook.com/stage_studio. You can also tweet me at @stage_studio. Till next time, I'm Dimae Roberts.